It's time.
We are not called to be nice.
Sandy Rios, welcome, Sandy. Thanks for being here.
We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
And you still like me, or you don't like me, James?
Are you okay? You all right?
I'm a musician. I can't help it.
Longtime Fox News contributor Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
We have, I think it's 4-1 youth in America wants gay marriage.
Our kids are the product of public schools. No wonder they poll the way they do.
It's time to stand up or we're going to lose everything we have.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something.
This isn't a game. This is real life.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association.
A pro-life radio talk show host.
Some things are worth fighting for.
He's paid nothing in federal taxes because the only years that anybody's ever seen were a couple of years when he had to turn them over to state authorities when he was trying to get a casino license, and they showed he didn't pay any federal income tax. So
that makes me smart.
There's a New York Times story that came out about an hour ago that says that when you came to the White House, you were paying about $750 a year in federal income tax.
Totally fake news. No, actually, I paid tax, and you'll see that as soon as my tax returns. It's under audit.
All right, Sandy Rios with you, and so here we go again. The Democrats have been trying to get President Trump's tax returns for a long time. Now, that was a clip from the debate between Hillary Clinton in 2016 and President Trump, in which she said he'd paid no taxes. They sort of cut it short when he said, that makes me smart. And he went on to explain, because I know the loopholes. It is tax law. It's perfectly legal, and we do things according to the law. And we find out, of course, so many entities, big companies, General Motors, many social media companies, they don't pay taxes at all either. And that's not right. Our tax law is not right in that. But it's if you're a businessman and you have a lot of money, just like you, if you have deductions, you take all the deductions when you do your taxes that you can, right? Well, that's what corporations do. And so the New York Times came out with a piece yesterday claiming that President Trump hasn't paid taxes. His tax attorney says he's paid millions in taxes. But I think in the last calendar year, he only paid $750. And so they're creating all these commercials. In fact, Joe Biden immediately – okay, so the New York Times article is published. And within hours, Joe Biden has a commercial about the very same thing. It almost makes you think maybe there's some sort of collusion. And so – the thing that the New York Times did not find was what they had hoped was that President Trump was doing business with Russia. That's what they claimed, and all the Russian collusion scandal. And they thought that they would find a lot more details. People that have gone over them, and we can't go into this right now in detail, say that there's really no there there. He took legal loopholes. It's complicated when you have that much money. Our taxes are complicated, and we don't have that much money by comparison. But his are very complicated, and they're salivating now. Of course, this is the day of the debate. It starts tonight. It's going to be in Cleveland, Ohio, between Joe Biden and President Trump. And as I watched television yesterday and read, it's just an all-out assault on him, at every point. The media, of course, is the assaulter. And we don't have, all the rallies and things. Even Fox, of course, is not helping him like they used to in reporting, positive news. And so it's an all-out assault against President Trump. Not much about Joe Biden. I find that very interesting. And as a matter of fact, Peter Doocy, though, did a good report last night on Joe Biden and his prep for the debate. Let's listen. It's clip two.
Joe Biden says tomorrow he's going to do something.
Just tell the truth.
That the opponent in his last one-on-one debate thought was a problem.
Look, here's the deal.
You're an honest guy. Why don't you just tell the truth here? We all make mistakes.
I am telling the truth.
6 months later, Biden is bracing himself for Trump.
My guess is it's going to be just straight attack. They're going to be mostly personal.
A hint of what's coming when Biden goes on offense, this online ad comparing blue-collar income tax bills with Trump's. The Democratic nominee had no public events today and hasn't visited a swing state since last Wednesday's trip to North Carolina, where running mate Kamala Harris just stopped.
President Trump and his party and Judge Barrett will overturn the Affordable Care Act, and they won't stop there.
Her Senate office and the campaign are keeping quiet about whether or not Harris will meet with Amy Coney Barrett as Joe Biden implores Senate Republicans to wait and let the election's winner fill the vacant Ginsburg seat.
The voters, in my view, are not going to stand for this abuse of power.
Biden won't consent to the performance-enhancing drug test President Trump is calling for. An official explains Vice President Biden intends to deliver his debate answers in words. If the president thinks his best case is made in urine, he can have at it. And he's going to try to stay in his own lane, ignoring news of day questions about things like court packing.
What I'm not going to do is play the Trump game, which is a good game he plays.
He doesn't have to play the game of the candidate who gave him the hardest time during the primaries either, his running mate.
Who threw the best shade during the Democratic primary debates? You got to pick one.
Beside myself.
All right, so that was Kamala Harris laughing about how well she did at taking down Joe Biden when she was a candidate. The irony is so rich. I want to talk about Joe Biden just for a few minutes. Yesterday, he was appearing at a campaign appearance, and actually, no, he was on television. And an MSNBC reporter, helped him along when he stumbled. This is clip 13. Let's listen.
For example, the Paycheck Protection Act. You know, 1% of the money's gone out. 1%. 1% of the that's not the paycheck, the bill for small, for major, for small businesses.
Main Street lending.
Main Street lending. 1%'s gone out.
Yeah, CNBC reporter helping Joe Biden. I wonder what Chris Wallace is going to do tonight. Well, I think I know, and that's what's got me concerned. But here's the thing. Joe Biden is losing his mental faculties. There's no question about that. Probably there's no question about him taking something to make him more alert. They do have medications like that, and we know that it's been happening more times than not. He doesn't come out. He can't talk. He gets confused. But he'll probably, the chances are he could do a very good showing tonight, at least adequate. But I think the deeper issue for me is this: Joe Biden's history, his own record. It's just horrendous, and I don't think enough is being said about that, and I want to give you just a little bit of a taste of it because I think it's important, because this really is such an important election, and Vice President Biden is being, shown as like Grandpa Joe, who we have sympathy for in the basement, who's this really nice guy, and he's kind of failing, but he's better than Trump, and it's just not the case. Joe Biden, in his full faculties, was not a nice guy, and he was not an honest man, and I'll give you specific examples. That's what was so interesting when Peter Ducey was giving his report, and Joe Biden starts out by saying, just tell the truth. Well, let me just tell you that I'm going to give you some specific examples. This one happened just last year. Mr. Biden, Joe, told voters in South Carolina that he got started in a historically black college. That's Delaware State University. Delaware State University came out yesterday and said, he's repeated that now. He went to a historically black college. That's how he got started. That's what Joe Biden said more than once. And at Delaware State University came out yesterday and said he never attended this university. And then, of course, we have so many stories that I don't have time to tell you all of them, but I'm going to tell you some of them. He claimed at least twice in February on South Carolina campaign stops that he and former UN Ambassador Andrew Young were arrested in the 1970s trying to visit Nelson Mandela in prison. Mr. Young, who was with him, Ambassador Andrew Young, later told media outlets that never happened. In a February 28th CNN interview, Mr. Biden acknowledged, "I wasn't arrested, but I was stopped." He went on to describe how Afrikaners with short pants and their guns made him go through a white-only door while directing black lawmakers elsewhere, an account disputed by others because, for one, the delegation didn't travel to South Africa in 1976, but to Lesotho, which did not have apartheid. And to put sort of underscore this, the Washington Post in February 25th did a fact check and said Biden's ridiculous claim he was arrested trying to see Mandela. That's just one example. There are so many more. I'm going to go on and give you just a couple more. I want to help you understand that he has a lifetime history of embellishment and lying. And yet on the campaign trail, he keeps talking about what a liar President Trump is. Last week, he told people when he was campaigning that he was the first in his family to go to college. In fact, he did that. He has used that before, but it's not true. He said that in 1988. And so in 1988, when he was a presidential candidate, he often would lift parts of speeches like from people like labor leader Neil Kinnock in Canada and use them in his speeches without attribution. Plagiarism. And that's why he dropped out of the race, because he was plagiarizing what he was saying. And so it's not true that he was the first Biden to go to college. That's another thing, that's another part of that that was not true, just not true. Here's another one. 33 years ago, he said that he was in New Hampshire, and he said that he attended Syracuse Law School on a full academic scholarship, the only one granted. And he graduated in the top half of his class and earned 3 undergraduate degrees. Trouble is, it wasn't true. He received a partial scholarship. It was based on financial need. He graduated 76th in a class of 85 and earned a bachelor's degree with a double major at University of Delaware. So none of those three parts were true. With Comedy Central host Jon Stewart on 2004, on Decision 2004, he said, blank, I might be president now if it weren't for the fact that I said my uncle was a coal miner. Turns out he didn't have anyone that was in the coal mine. So that was not true either. And, of course, he uses that all the time. He talks about being hard scrabble from Scranton, Pennsylvania. In fact, the Republicans have actually, the opposition have compiled this list of Joe's lies. They call it Joseph's Book of Fables. And so, but this is from another article called The Man, the Myth, Biden Still Spinning Fables Despite His 1988 Election Disaster. And again, that disaster was that he lied so much he had to drop out of the race. He was found plagiarizing and lying. And so I'm just telling you, this is the man that's, I remember when he grilled Clarence Thomas, when Clarence was, Justice Thomas was on the spot before the Judiciary Committee to become a Supreme Court justice. And Joe Biden came after him with a vengeance and said very offensive things and led this group of white Judiciary Committee men to sort of lead this charge against Clarence Thomas, accusing him of all kinds of things. And that's why Clarence Thomas said this is nothing more than a high-tech lynching. That was Joe Biden, the head of the Judiciary Committee at the time. I just want to remind you of who he is. He is, yes, he's failing now, and all of us have sympathy for his ailing health. We have sympathy for that, but we mustn't have sympathy for a man who does not have integrity. And the potential is ahead in the polls. It's a potential. It is absolutely potentially possible that Joe Biden might be the next president. And that's frightening to me. And that's why I'm spending so much time on it. By the way, Fox is going to have Chris Steigerwalt doing fact checking. Let me tell you, Chris Steigerwalt is the political director at Fox News. And that's one of the reasons Fox News has gone south from my perspective. So if you're watching Fox tonight, I wouldn't trust them. I think the Wall Street Journal has a fact-checking entity. I would trust them. Daily Caller will probably do the same thing. Now, I don't know that for certain, but I imagine they would do the same thing as well. And so I'm just saying, as you watch tonight, just use your discernment and wisdom. Now, President Trump, of course, no telling what he's going to do. I think it's a terrible mistake for him to talk about Joe Biden being dumb. I don't think that's a good thing. I'm just telling you right up front. I think he needs to attack Joe Biden on his record and on things like this, his dishonesty. You know, even Jill Biden's former husband, I mentioned this to you probably a month ago, came out with a story. He said it's just not true that Jill met Joe Biden when he was single with 2 boys, that he and Jill had worked on Joe Biden's political campaign. And Joe Biden's wife was still alive when Jill and Joe Biden began to have an affair. It's quite a story, and it sounds it's a long story, but that's been the stuff of his campaign stump speech for a long time, about the sweet story about how Jill came along and rescued him with 2 boys. He was a widower, and I, according to her husband, and he's not embittered. He still says he has great, he loves Jill. I don't know about romantically, but he says that's just not true. So one more thing to add to the table, and so tonight when you watch, you're going to have to take the measure of both men, and you got to think about the security and the future of this country. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
One of the greatest attacks in America was an attack perpetrated by our very own Supreme Court.
That was the legalization of abortion. Now, subsequent to that, there have been 70 million babies slaughtered in the wombs of their mothers. That is more than the entire population of Canada and Australia combined.
Kevin Sorbo of the hit films God's Not Dead and Let There Be Light supports life.
I wanted to invite you to offer your full support for the Ministry of Preborn and its leader, Dan Steiner. The team at Preborn is very focused and very successful at saving preborn babies from abortion.
Join Kevin Sorbo and Preborn in standing for life. By letting a mother see her baby on ultrasound and hear the heartbeat, she'll choose life 80% of the time. For $140, you can help save five babies' lives. To donate, dial pound 250 and say the keyword baby. That's pound 250 baby. Or donate securely at preborn.com.
Well, these are certainly tough, tough times, aren't they? Hi, it's Michael Woolworth with Bible League International, engaging the world with God's Word for more than 80 years at only $5 a Bible. You know, I'm grateful that God has given Bible League a platform for more than eight decades to address the other pandemic, and that's the shortage of Bibles all over the world in places like Asia, Africa, the Middle East, and Latin America. In fact, at Bible League, we determined that as few as one Christian in 10 has a Bible. What's that mean? That during this pandemic, many evangelical Christians elsewhere in the world cannot open their Bible and be reminded of God's promises, like 1 Peter 5:7, cast your cares on Him, for He cares for you. But you know, during this time of sheltering in place, we can shelter in grace. Learn how you can be a blessing to believers around the world praying for a Bible by visiting sendbiblesnow.org. That's sendbiblesnow.org, or by calling Bible League at 800-YES-WORD, 800-YES-WORD.
Hello, Americans. I'm Todd Starnes with news and commentary next.
My goal as a teacher is to impart knowledge and then be able then for them to take it and turn it into wisdom. As we teach, I think, okay, 5 years down the road, how will the material that I am teaching them really affect their lives and their careers?
Hi, Todd Starnes here. Truett offers biblically centered degree programs. Check out truett.edu/starnes. The Memphis City Council is going to consider renaming a stretch of Poplar Avenue to Black Lives Matter Avenue. Council members say it's the only way to recognize the worth of black lives within a society that has historically devalued black life. And the only way to do that is to rename Poplar Avenue. By the way, Poplar Avenue, named after a tree, not a Confederate war general. Critics say it has nothing to do with honoring the black community and everything to do with sticking it to police officers. That's because the city's criminal justice center is located on, you guessed it, Poplar Avenue. Not only that, but Black Lives Matter is a Marxist organization that wants to overthrow our way of life. They may as well name Poplar Avenue Karl Marx Boulevard. And everybody knows that's a dead-end street. Be sure to listen to my national radio show live noon to 3 Eastern, or you can download the free podcast at toddstarnes.com.
Sandy Rios in the Morning on American Family Radio.
She was part of our culture. Yes, we wear those notorious B.I.G. t-shirts with a lot of pride. But since she passed, there are parents reminding their children that she helped their life.
All right, so that's Kamala Harris with a big oops yesterday. She was talking about the notorious RGB, and she said the notorious B.I.G. So that's kind of funny. But it's not funny about Ruth Bader Ginsburg, and I want to make a point about this before I introduce our next guest. You know, I mentioned probably 10 days ago that Ruth Bader Ginsburg, maybe not quite 10, was in support of lowering the age of consent for sex to 12. And people have asked me, well, where did you get that? How do you know that? That can't be true. The fact checkers online are saying that's not true. You know, actually, I'm going to give you a resource for it because, and then I want to tell you why I said that, because this kind of thing has been being promoted for a very long time. And I would know because I was there when it was being promoted. This particular information is from Eagle Forum, and it was a document that they gave to the Senate when they were in the process of confirming Ruth Bader Ginsburg. And it was in the moral standards part. It's on page 521, and it's part of it. It says the age of consent for sexual acts must be lowered to 12 years old. And that's one of the points they made about her. We will put that on our Facebook page, this Eagle Forum document, so that you can look for that for yourself. But I want to also make the point that this was standard fare for the feminists of her time. Hillary Clinton was all about that. You may not have heard her say that. Of course not. But she was pushing the UN Treaty on the Rights of the Child, the UN Treaty on the Rights of the Child. And that, in part of that treaty, the whole thing was, it wasn't what you think. You'd think from the name of it you're trying to protect children. But actually, they were talking about children being emancipated from their parents, having a right to make their own decisions. It was a radical document, and it also included that children had a right to be sexually active. And that translated into a book that was, I think, published in 2002 called Harmful to Minors. And the whole thing about, you think that harmful to minors, you kind of think, well, that must be good, right? But what they're talking about in that book is that if you deny children the freedom to have sex, that's harmful to them. How dare you? I would know this because I debated former former Surgeon General Jocelyn Elder. She was Surgeon General under Bill Clinton over this particular thing. We had quite an exchange, an angry exchange. So this I do know about, and so we'll put that reference on our Facebook page, and you can look at it. Well, our next guest, you know, the perversion that swims around us is just getting more and more pervasive. And Victoria Cobb, who is the president of the Virginia Family Foundation, joins us this morning because there's something happening in Virginia that you won't believe. You just won't believe. Victoria, thanks for joining us this morning.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, okay, so something has come to your attention. I don't know if people in Virginia even know about this, so that, just let it, just tell us what's going on, Victoria, because they will want to know.
Kid-friendly postcards are showing up in families' mailboxes addressed to the children, inviting our teens to use what amounts to a sex text hotline promoted by the state government. The postcard invites your child to anonymously text their questions about sex, relationships, and gender identity to a perfect stranger to get answers in 24 hours. And so what this is it's a part of an initiative run by the Virginia Department of Health. And ultimately, we all know that falls under our great governor. And I'm saying that with some jest because we've seen so many disappointing things out of him, but Governor Ralph Northam's purview. And so parents need to be on guard for their mailbox. You be the one to get the mail over the next several weeks.
All right, so what age children are these being sent to?
Well, we are still trying to get all of the information. The official, we want the official parameters of the database, what was used, being aimed at. The postcard is claiming, it actually doesn't have sort of an age on it. It talks about, hey, want to talk about the birds and the bees, and it's done in a very kid way. It's sort of animated on the front, so to speak. The third party that actually runs the hotline, now that's an important factor, too. Your kid will not actually be texting with the Department of Health, even though the postcard would lead you to believe that. They will be texting into a line run by the American Sexual Health Association. And that group claims that it's targeting 13 to 18 is what they claim on their website. However, you know, how you're targeting when you just send a postcard that appeals to children. But 13-year-olds is where they claim to start.
Okay, so how in the world did you find out about this, Victoria?
Well, thankfully, people who are getting the postcards are outraged. They are thankfully quickly calling their legislators. They've dialed into the Family Foundation, letting us know. Because, I mean, we would argue all adults in the life of children should be pushing children to talk to their own parents about these sensitive topics. You know, for years, we've monitored family life education in Virginia. That's a code word for sex ed in Virginia. And we desperately tried to make it an opt-in program, because we think this conversation starts in the home. We're still in Virginia and opt out, but now we're essentially circumventing even having to go through the public school. Let's just go directly into the mailboxes, reach directly out to the kids, and, you know, don't even bother with the opt out family life education thing. Let's just skip the parent altogether. And it's, I think what's particularly alarming parents is not just this idea of total denial of parental authority and where the conversation belongs, but it's also the idea that we have now created something that is telling our kids the exact opposite message that we tell them all the time with regards to technology and strangers. We say, don't talk to strangers. Don't give out your phone number. Don't send any inappropriate pictures. Everything you do on your phone is permanent, right? I mean, every parent who has a child who has a phone has had these conversations. And even if you don't have a phone, the don't talk to strangers starts, you know, when they're two. And yet, what we've had is now the government saying, oh, no, do talk to strangers. Do give out your phone number because we don't know yet. We still have not gotten to the bottom of what else can be done with these phone numbers once someone texts in on this line. You know, and then they're saying, we're going to help you with STIs. I can't imagine what kind of pictures could be transmitted, and children don't know better than to send a terrible picture. So it's a shocker for all parents who are becoming aware of this.
So, you know, this reminds me a lot of Teen Wire, at least I'm not familiar with it now, but I was in the past. Planned Parenthood had this very graphic sexual information on their face, on their, at the time, website that was for children. It was just shocking. They talked about how to have, you know, same-sex sex techniques, all kinds of stuff on Teen Wire. So this sounds like the same but different, Victoria.
It takes you to a third-party site, and what you'll find, you can find everything from right at the front. It says how to be an ambassador. So we want these kids, they're not only soliciting our kids, they're encouraging our kids to solicit their friends on social media networks. So you start with that, and then you get to things like abortion, and it's real women talk about abortion, and my, they downplay the lifelong damage, not just to the unborn child who then loses their life, but to the woman, or in this case, the young girls who would be considering abortion. Then they have a checklist about, should I tell my parents? And I will tell you that there are not the best questions on that list. Again, it's the whole concept behind this, which is hitting parents in every direction. It's happening at school. I had it happen in my daughter's medical office. But we're having all these adults plant subtle messages to our children that says, your parents aren't really on your team about this. They're not really out to help you. They're not really where you need to go. Let me have a confidential conversation with you. You know, guidance counselors at school, you know, we're not going to tell the parents. Family Foundation's been fighting those battles for decades. You know, at the doctor's office, just step out for a minute. Let me talk to your child. She needs to develop a confidential. No, she doesn't. She needs to start having this conversation with her parents. That's the role. Everybody needs to be reinforcing this. And this postcard just adds to that and adds an element of not even a trusted adult, which is what used to be the liberal line, you know, we want everybody to talk to a trusted adult. This is an anonymous sex text hotline.
You know what it reminds me also of, Victoria, this is, you know, pedophiles soften their victims. They break down barriers for children. And they do that carefully over a course of time. This breaks down the natural modesty of children. To have them talk about such things in a text to a stranger, that breaks down their natural modesty. This just is very creepy to me. And the texting thing is new, but of course the whole issue, like you just said, of separating children from their parents, that is not new. That started when my son was in school, and he's a grown man now. It was very gradual, but they started doing that, and now I think it's just mainstream that we have these secret things that happen at school. Remember, Victoria, a couple of weeks ago when they started talking about virtual classrooms, that the teachers, many, were upset about parents being present when they were teaching. They were concerned about parents overhearing things that they might be saying to their children. Remember that?
This is the moment. Parents have to double down. They need to be watching what's happening in virtual school. If they have the opportunity, they need to be. And it's sad that we literally have to beat our children to the mailbox now because our government is soliciting our children to talk about sex to a stranger. I mean, that is the epitome of everything that is wrong. So we're trying to get to the bottom of it. We've asked a bunch of questions, and we have a campaign we're working against. We encourage people to be a part of the effort to shut this down. So let me just kind of real quick give you some key steps. The easiest thing for people to do to get all the steps is just go to familyfoundation.org. There's a banner right there, you know, stop sex text line, and you just click on that and it'll help you through the steps. But we want to do a number of things. One, we're petitioning the governor. We're going to tell him how many parents are upset about this. So that's step one. The second thing is we're trying to get this text line to decide to cut this contract. So we're actually directly engaging with the third-party provider, this ASHA. We're trying to say, don't connect our kids to strangers directly onto the text line to encourage them to stop. And then the third piece is happening today. A lot of folks don't realize the General Assembly is in special session right now. So there is a moment, and they're reviewing the budget. So what we're trying to do is actually through a budget amendment, Delegate Kathy Byron's going to carry an amendment to the floor today to try to get the funding for this thing cut off, which would shut down the process as well. So there's a lot of steps that people can be a part of to try to cut this thing off, because people should be flabbergasted. And I don't think you have to even have young children to realize the direction all of this is headed. And to your point, it's hard not to use the word grooming when we're talking about this. You know, I don't want to overplay, but I don't want to underplay either what's going on here.
No, and I want to let me reiterate what you just said. Go to familyfoundation.org, and the campaign is called hashtag Stop Sex Text Line. Hashtag Stop Sex Text Line. But you can read about it and find out what you can do. And I guess if the General Assembly is meeting today, I'm guessing, Victoria, that you would ask people to call their representatives and ask them to. They may not know what they're talking about when they call. So how would you handle
that? That's exactly right. Yes, they need to call their delegate and tell their delegate this has got to be shut down through the budget. And I think it kind of self-placed on the scene these mail, but these postcard cards just started dropping. So it is a possibility you're going to be explaining to the delegate you don't want to receive this postcard in your mailbox. We still don't know the entire target audience. We were told it was something like teenage children in counties that have high teen pregnancy. That's sort of the general part that we know. But you tell your delegate this program needs to end, and it can happen through a floor amendment today in the House of Delegates.
Okay, so excellent. So that's very, very clear. So I would suggest people go to the foundation, familyfoundation.org, and read a little bit before you make that phone call and make a few notes and be prepared to have a conversation. And also, always be respectful. Always be respectful. But that doesn't mean weak. Be firm and honest and truthful. Speak the truth. That's pretty shattering as it is. And so just do that with your representative. The other thing is, Victoria, you point out this is not happening just in Virginia. Where else is it? Where else are we seeing it?
Well, according to the third-party provider, if you look, it looks like it's happening in North Carolina and New Mexico. We really don't know all the places this could be happening, and we just simply need pressure on this organization, in addition to our government, to just simply stop this whole concept, because it's not just about our kids. It's about kids everywhere being essentially, as you said it, you know, having their senses dulled, that they can just talk about sex to a stranger on a phone. You know, I mean, this is everything that is wrong that we tell our kids not to do. So it is happening in other places in the country, and we absolutely want to get this shut down.
You know, and I think it's been my observation, Victoria, through the years, that most parents don't want to be controversial. They want to be nice. They got their hands full, or they're working or whatever. And if there's ever a time to speak up, it's in protection of our children, for heaven's sake. We're in the situation we're in, I think, where our children are falling prey to horrible things in public schools because parents have absented themselves and chosen, I think, in many cases, to trust the education system and the teachers when they even knew there was a problem, but they did not want to know. It's like, don't tell me, don't tell me. And so I'm just saying to all of you, if you wonder why our country has come to this point where our schools have become cesspools, really, of instruction that would shock and horrify you, really, if you knew all of it, it's because you haven't been involved. And I don't mean to lay a guilt trip, but I do. On people my own, you know, my own generation, I remember being one of very few to get involved. We just couldn't get people to really step up to the plate. So don't let that happen. Make a change. Do something in your life. Make it a priority. It's your children. If your children were falling off a cliff or stepping into a roadway in front of a car, you would do something. And so it's time to do something. So go to familyfoundation.org. And read a little bit more about this. And then also if you're in Virginia, call your assemblyman today and tell them about this, what's happening with the postcards, and ask them to vote for the amendment if it makes its way into the budget. I think that's basically what you suggested, Victoria. Maybe you could put something on your Facebook page to kind of address that and give them some verbiage. That would be helpful. Victoria, thank you. You do such great work. Virginia Family Foundation, and I appreciate your time this morning.
Thanks for having
Sandy
me.
Sandy Rios in the morning. Yeah, my pleasure. Okay, Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
AFA is pleased with President Trump's nomination of Amy Coney Barrett as our next Supreme Court justice. Judge Barrett opposes judicial activism, and she's a well-respected woman of faith. Liberal opposition to this nominee by anti-religious bigots will be intense. Now's the time to contact your senators and urge them to stand strong against the liberal tsunami of hate aimed at Judge Barrett. Email or call and urge your senators to confirm Amy Coney Barrett. Learn more at afa.net.
Washington Watch advances a culture where human life is valued and religious liberty thrives.
Hello, this is Tony Perkins, host of Washington Watch, right here on the American Family Radio Network, inviting you to join us each weekend for the weekend edition of Washington Watch for the latest from our nation's capital on what is happening as it pertains to faith, family, and freedom. You'll hear from policymakers, congressional leaders, and others each day, 4 p.m. Central Time. Be there.
Do not participate in the unfruitful deeds of darkness, but instead expose them. My name is Abraham Hamilton III, and this is the Hamilton Minute. In the months following the rioting around the country, the Black Lives Matter organization's popularity has decreased. News of its Marxist, anti-family, man-hating, unbiblical positions, not to mention its founders' express commitment to witchcraft, are finally hitting the mainstream. Consequently, the wicked organization has now scrubbed its website of its What We Believe page. They formally housed their commitment to destroy the nuclear family, among other things, there. Now, if you try to go to that page, you'll get an error message saying the page does not exist. Interesting timing to hide their beliefs, isn't it?
Listen each weekday from 5 to 6 p.m. Central for the Hamilton Corner, or visit the podcast page at afr.net for more from Abraham Hamilton III, public policy analyst for the American Family Association.
Brian Fisher here with today's Life and Liberty Minute. This year's presidential election is already one of the most bitterly contested in U.S. history. What if the Electoral College does not produce a clear result? The Constitution has the answer. If no candidate has an Electoral College majority, the House of Representatives shall immediately, note that word, choose the president through a vote in which the delegation of each state gets one vote. So 50 votes will be cast to determine the next president. Now here's the kicker. Even though the House today has a majority of Democrats, that's irrelevant because the Republicans control more state delegations than Democrats do by a margin of 26 to 23, with Michigan's delegation being split 7-7. If Republicans remain faithful, say hello to our next president, Donald J. Trump.
Catch Brian Fisher on Focal Point, weekday afternoons at 105 Central on American Family Radio.
This is Frank Gaffney with the Secure Freedom Minute. It's always hazardous to make predictions about presidential debates. One upshot of tonight's featuring the first of three scheduled between Donald Trump and Joe Biden seems bankable. However, based on the evidence available in the course of the campaign to date, the former vice president will likely show signs of infirmity. If so, the question is, will his condition be widely perceived as disqualifying as a candidate for what is arguably the world's most demanding job? Two thoughts occur. First, the Democratic Party might be blamed for elder abuse in selecting and exploiting such a nominee. Second, its ticket's recent references to a Harris and Harris-Biden administration obviously portend a coming change in the Democratic lineup. Maybe not after the election, though, but before it. Given such a development's wild implications for the campaign's endgame and outcome, that must be sorted out now. This is Frank Gaffney.
Don't forget to connect with Sandy Rios in the Morning on Facebook or email Sandy at sandy@afr.net. That's sandy@afr.net. Sandy Rios in the Morning on American Family Radio.
We asked for a hard copy of the registration application so that we could see the signature.
Verifying mail-in votes. The problem this year, experts say, is volume.
There are a lot of state laws that do not reflect reality.
Here's why. It's time-consuming. A ballot arrives. Is the voter registered? The address accurate? Does the signature match the one on file? Envelopes must be sliced open, ballots removed, sorted, put in a box. It's one thing when just 5% vote by mail, but this year, because of COVID, some states expect up to 50%. Yet many don't even begin counting till election night.
About half of the problems tend to be with the voter signature or the signature of a witness. And the earlier states are able to process the ballot and to do signature matching and verification, the more time they'll have to get back to those voters who may have made an error.
These states begin processing ballots the moment they arrive, allowing for quick reporting. Others begin verification about a week before Election Day. But these states, which include multiple battlegrounds, don't process ballots until Election Day, meaning a final count could take weeks.
Early processing does lead to earlier results being released.
Reform groups wanted laws amended for early processing. Some states did, others did not.
The phrase my mother would have used is, don't change horses in the middle of a stream.
Since many are voting by mail for the first time, analysts expect a lot of rejected ballots. That means legal fights. So early verification could help, but others argue or fear that partisans will release those vote totals early, and that's a different election nightmare.
All right, that was William Lajeunesse on Fox last night. And, of course, we have Houston, we have a problem. We have a problem. The stories on voting this morning, there were so many. I made some notes here. I just want to say in Wisconsin, some judges decided that, no, this election cycle, people don't need to follow the strict ID laws there. They have other ways of verifying. You don't have to have a, you know, you can be granted permission to vote without that proper ID. In Virginia, 1,400 voters in Fairfax County have received two, not one, but two absentee ballots. And it was a mistake, they say. Now it was a printing error, and they are so very sorry. Then in Texas, an appeals court has just blocked a lower court decision allowing straight ticket voting. And straight ticket voting, of course, is something that generally, if you vote for the top of the ticket, the president, then that means you'd vote for all Democrats or all Republicans. A lot of people like to vote that way. And so that's the way it's playing out. I told you that the Democrats have hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of attorneys working on all of these voting issues. They've spent millions of dollars and are spending. And so I think, Houston, we might have a problem. Now, that concerns me because last night Martha McCollum had a group of women, moms, from Ohio, and she did kind of a town hall with them. It was very interesting. We just pulled up this one part because I want to hear you to hear what they have to say about, for instance, now, the reason I'm playing this is because this is people's understanding right now, and yet some are already voting because they're getting their mail-in ballots. We are still days away. So many things can happen. I want you to hear this, a short interaction between Martha and these women from Ohio. Let's listen.
Before we wrap up, I want to ask you about the Supreme Court.
I think she's going to do a great job. I'm excited. I'm very nervous that we're doing this so close to an election, though.
Would you have rather that the president waited till after?
Honestly, and this will get a lot of conservatives upset, yes, I think we should have waited till after the election. I know these people are screaming, fill the seat,
should have waited.
I think we should wait.
I don't agree.
The timing was okay.
Constitutionally, we needed to do it.
Yeah. Kathy, what do you think? He's in office for 4 years, and if the roles had been reversed, the Democrats would have done that.
I don't blame President Trump for putting forth a nominee. That's certainly in his, you know, his right to do so. I do think it was wrong of the Senate to be willing to review it. You know, we are so close to an election. Because if Trump wins, then he has every right to put forth that candidate, and it should be a very easy nomination process. But if he doesn't, you know, this is something that will change the Supreme Court for decades.
I'm very concerned about her track record as a severe social conservative, very extreme. This is not someone who represents the center of where Americans are in terms of their thoughts. And
because why do you see her that way?
Familiar with her jurisprudence and, yeah. I mean, even just dissenting opinions.
Severe conservative, and the next president should be able to appoint this person on the Supreme Court. My husband happens to be in the studio right this very minute, so I've just asked him, I grabbed him. I want him to sit down. Honey, what do you think about that exchange? We haven't even talked about that. What are your thoughts if you were talking to those women?
Well, I'm not sure why people are having so much problem with President Trump putting forth a nominee. I mean, it's actually constitutionally mandated. And this fairness test, I guess is what you'd call it, that people are adding to it. You know, our government is not run by rules of quote-unquote fairness. It's run by the laws. And when people start saying like, well, Ruth Bader Ginsburg didn't want her seat filled, it's not her seat. It's the government seat. And the government is run by a constitution. And I struggle with people having such a hard time over that.
You know, I was thinking as I was listening to that last night, I thought, oh, wait a second. So that means, according to that logic, the Senate should not vote on anything right now because they may not be there. They should wait till the new Senate comes in to vote on, you know, a budget and everything because – and the House. They don't know they're going to be elected, and some of them are not going to be elected, so they should not vote on anything. And when should that start? Should it have started 2 months ago, 3 months ago when the we saw an election approaching and we were going to have a new Senate or a new House? Should we – if they've just stopped voting altogether because we should wait till that new body – deliberates because it makes no sense. They are in office as they are in office.
And I mean, if you think about it, every election results in a lame duck status period of 2 months. Now, based upon what the lady was saying that wants us to wait to fill the seat, you would do nothing then also during that 2 months. Well, why not just have a transition of power immediately then?
Right.
I mean, they do in other countries. Actually, I think the United States is the longest transitioning country in the world once an election is held. Well, why not just say, okay, the election's on Tuesday, on the following Monday, seat everybody in the new government and let's go.
Yeah, I think the thing that distressed me, Bruce, is how uninformed people are and they're just not thinking. One of the women there said, you know, so many things are at stake. And I'm not sure people understand really and truly, really down to their DNA. I think probably listeners to this show get it. But I don't think most people that are, you know, responding to these polls understand what's at stake for them. If you were to have a conversation, and you do love to have conversations with someone who said, well, you know, I just like Joe better. And, you know, President Trump, he's a liar or whatever else. And they're all the same anyway, these politicians. And it's time for the Democrats to have a chance. What would you say to them?
You know, I think the most persuasive argument is compare President Trump's accomplishments in 47 months to what Joe Biden has accomplished in 47 years in politics. Had COVID not hit, and I believe it was a directed attack by the Chinese, I think President Trump was getting he was doing amazing things, and he was starting to become a threat to China both economically and militarily. And you think back to January before COVID hit, what the president was doing, the economy was on fire. The Supreme Court, we knew, was starting to sort itself out. Judges were being appointed. Every economic group was doing better. Blacks, Hispanics, women, you name it. And then you look at Joe Biden's records. Everything I hear him talk about is going back to overregulation, more taxes. He's basically running Obama with a new name on it.
Yes, and of course he is really run to the left so hard. And who in their right mind thinks that he will try to stop that? Even if he gets elected, even that he could possibly even serve in that capacity. We see Kamala Harris behind him. Kamala, we should talk more about her because she, and we will, we probably don't have time in this moment, but Kamala is a radical leftist. She's in the street. She's out praising Black Lives Matter right now as we see them in the streets rioting. She thinks they're wonderful, and she will be the de facto leader if he steps aside.
She will be. If you want to talk about Joe Biden, what I would say is think of him as a puppet with someone's hand up behind him operating his mouth because tonight I would say the answers coming out of his mouth, if you pay attention to them, you'll be able to tell this was something that was scripted for him and that he was fed. And if he gets off the script, I think you'll be able to tell. He'll go back to his snarky. You know, I think Joe Biden has lived on being if you think back, he came in the 70s. There was no internet then. You could say whatever you wanted to whomever you were speaking to, and that group would, you know, that speech would go away. Then you'd move on to the next group and appeal to them with a different speech. And if you look at Joe Biden's past, he's gotten by on being a smiling back slapper. We all know these kind of people. they're good looking, they're fun, they're the life of the party, but we're not electing the life of the party. We're trying to elect a president.
Yeah, I agree. What do you think is going to happen tonight?
You know, I'm worried tonight because if you watch the ads that Joe Biden has been running, he's really tugging at the heartstrings. Like, I'm just a great guy. I'm just a nice guy.
I want to protect your health care.
I want to protect you.
What's going to do with that?
You know, Donald Trump is a mean man. He doesn't care about you. And, you know, I say let results be your guide, not the glitz and glam of, oh, he has such a wonderful personal story. Actually, Joe Biden does not have a wonderful personal story. He's been a strange man around women all his career. I think this whole thing of he and his wife was a fairy tale they concocted. It really was an adulterous affair that started when they were both working for the same person.
For Joe Biden.
Yeah, for Joe Biden.
Jill and her husband working for Joe Biden.
It's just unbelievable. Yeah. And
he's gotten away with it for years.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, it's amazing. All right, so then you know the President Trump is being hit at every turn. I want to play this one thing for you because I want you to respond to it. This is Al Sharpton commenting on the tax scandal that it's not a scandal. It really isn't. But they wish it were, but they make it sound like it. Sharpton responded to this. This is clip 12. Let's listen.
One of the things that I looked at this when I looked at the New York Times story, I'm someone that had tax problems. The right wing blasted me for it. Many of my friends, including you, Joe, said, if you messed up, own it, correct it, and go forward. And I did. I want the right wing on Fox and others to hold him to the same standard they did me and others on the left that had tax problems. Yeah. Because we never said we were great businessmen. That wasn't our brand. Our brand was social activism. His only brand was he was this great billionaire that could make magic happen in the sky. And we find out when we look behind the curtain, the Wizard of Oz had no clothes and only a $750 check for the U.S. government.
All right, so I just have to let you respond to that.
I feel like you should insert a laugh track here. Yeah. My eyes are rolling over. You know, a friend of ours always says, if the liberals had no double standards, they'd have no standards at all. And to hear Al Sharpton talk about that he's corrected his tax problems, to my understanding, he hasn't paid anything. He owes over $1 million in back taxes, yet he has a job that he is paid well for on television. He wears beautiful suits. He travels in high-rolling circles. But yet he doesn't have any money to pay his taxes. But he tells us he's fixed his problem.
Yeah, so well, it's different just not paying your taxes and using the law with its tax loopholes to get out of paying taxes. That's a very different thing. Yeah. The New York Times, actually in 2014, this is their headline, as Sharpton rose, so did his unpaid taxes. So Sharpton defaulted on his taxes. That's not the same thing as President Trump taking loopholes through his business, and I just think that needs to be made clear. And for Sharpton to even bring that up in a conversation is pretty rich, as you have to think
really,
about.
Really, I'm trying to keep myself from laughing,
yeah,
to be honest.
I know. Anyway, well, tonight's going to be interesting, and I think so much rides on it, and we just pray that it goes well and that the truth is revealed, no matter what that is on that stage. This is the first of three. I do wonder how Joe Biden's going to manage without the teleprompter, because we know that in those basement interviews, someone else has written his words and he's been reading them. So I'm curious to see how in the world he's going to carry this off tonight. So we'll find out. Be sure and tune in. And of course,
you can bet that the moderator, Chris Wallace, will help him at every chance he can.
Yes, he will. I think you're right, Bruce, my husband. All right, take a break. About 24 hours. Be back here tomorrow. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.